You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Spilling Ink is brought to you by Book Branders, your self-publishing concierge. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another special live edition of Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the book to meet the authors and artists in the publishing industry. We are here with a great panel of guests today. This is our Greatest Showmen and Women edition, and I can't wait to introduce you to all of them. But first, I want to give you a little word from our sponsor, Book Branders. Book Branders is your self-publishing concierge, providing package and a la carte solutions to get your book to market. From book design to editing and marketing, their team of professionals can help you successfully bring your book on the market without breaking the bank. You can contact Book Branders today at bookbranders.com, and you'll even get a free 10-step guide to self-publishing. And one of our other hosts, Katie Salaitis, who is unfortunately not with us tonight, has worked with Book Branders extensively, and she can vouch for them as an awesome company. All right, so tonight we have some very cool people. They have all been on the show before, but we absolutely love talking to them. All of these guys are talk show hosts or podcast hosts themselves, so this should be quite an experience for you. First up, we have Mr. Joshua Pantelaresco. How's it going tonight, Josh?
It's going good.
Did I pronounce your last name right?
Yeah, you got it in one.
Yes! All right. Also tonight, we have J.E. Taylor. How's it going?
Hello, it's going well. I'm here for Katie.
Well, you're not just here for Katie. We love you too, Jim.
I know, but she asked me to help out, and I'm like, okay, sure.
And I have to say,
I'm part of the team, so
you are part of our team, and we love you. And you look stunning tonight in your cool Christmas shirt.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. All right, we also have Mr. Joe Compton. How's it going, Joe?
Hello, everybody. It's going good.
Excellent. And then last but certainly not least, we have Miss Christine Stratus.
Hey, everyone. How are you doing?
Great. You know, and I think that I might have just called you Christine. And if I did, I apologize. It's Christy Stratus. Yeah. So I'm sorry if I said Christine. Sometimes my words get a little mushy. But exactly. So since we've got Christy right now, Christy, tell us what you do.
Well, I'm the author of Anatomy of a Darkened Heart and Brotherhood of Secrets, which are both Victorian psychological suspense. And I also have my own editing company, which you can find at proofpositivepro.com. And I'm doing that full time now. So it's an exciting time for me. Yeah. And I have, of course, as you probably almost mentioned before, The Writer's Edge, which you can find on YouTube. So that's just The Writer's Edge Show on YouTube, youtube.com/The Writer's Edge Show.
Yes. And it's a really, really cool show. And while we do a lot of kind of bouncing around, and I usually derail our shows 3 or 4 times a night, but Christy's show is structured so much better than what I could do. And it's really, really informative. So that's definitely one that anyone out there watching or listening wants to check out. So Joe, what about you? Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, I am an author. I wrote the book Amongst the Killing, which is a crime thriller, and the sequel will be out in March, which is We the Moral Majority. And I run the online network called Go Indie Now, which basically highlights and supports indie artists of all art forms. And we do so through produced shows that we produce on a weekly, monthly. We're going to be starting daily here pretty soon. And we do interviews that we post periodically. And I just came from a film festival earlier today, and I've got another show coming out tonight. And so, yeah, that's what I do.
Well, and just so you all know, when Katie and I, because Katie and I talk a lot about, you know, kind of what's happening with this show and in the future with this show, you know, and we're talking about things that work and what things that we'd like to accomplish. Every conversation we have, we end up bringing up Joe Compton's network that he's got going, because he really does a lot of cool stuff, guys. And It's a great series of shows, so you definitely want to check him out. Mr. Josh over there, hiding in the corner. Tell us about yourself, Josh.
I write stuff. My next book, Alicero, which is a prologue to a book board game series coming out later, is coming out in January. My following book after was just The Cloud Diver, which I think March, but if not April at the absolute latest. I have a podcast called Just Joshing. I've interviewed authors primarily, but I've also interviewed photographers, comedians, pro wrestlers, politicians, comic book creators, and basically I get to make an ass of myself on the air and people seem to like it. So I have fun doing it. People love it.
And you sometimes are a little too chill about the show, but you just recently won the Aurora Award for Best Podcast, didn't you?
Well, I didn't put my name up for nomination or anything like that. I literally woke up one email morning and I was like, you're nominated. I went to VCon and I heard my name called out. I didn't expect that. It's definitely been one of many amazing surprises this year. And I got a lot I still can't talk about just yet, but lots of things are happening. So it's been a fun ride this last year. I really can't complain. So,
you know, he won't tell you all about it, but he's told me, or some of it at least. And oh man, is it juicy? It's juicy. It's good stuff. All right. J.E., I have an admission. Now, at the beginning of every one of Josh's podcasts, he says, if you'd like to, you know, confess anything or disclose anything, now's the time to do it. And so I have a confession to make.
Yes.
When I was on Josh's podcast and I was talking about our staff members, I said that J.E. Johnson was one of our hosts. And it's not J.E. Johnson.
But no, it's not.
In my defense, one of our good friends is J.E. Johnson from out west. And so I had her in my head when I was talking. And so I feel bad. So, J.E., why don't you tell us about the real you?
J.E. Taylor. I'm called Jane by Jason and Katie on the show. I write paranormal thrillers. My latest one is right up there, Snow, which is a take on Snow White, and it's dark. and I'm writing a new one right now that first half went to my editor. It's called Fire Cursed, so it's about the daughter of Lucifer.
Is that going to be a steamy one or no?
No, because she's a teenager in it.
So, okay, because you write steamy stuff as well.
Oh, yes, I do. I have a paranormal thread.
Well, that's cool. And, you know, and that seems, to me anyway, and that's not the genre that I read, but it does seem like paranormal romance is still fairly popular right now, isn't it?
I believe so. I don't know. It's what I like to write, and I'm not one that subscribes necessarily to rate to market, although I probably should. I write what I really like, and you know what drives me, and my readers seem to like it.
Are any of you here on this panel tonight? Do any of you get really into the rate to market?
I
see handshakes.
Okay. Well, many of us have heard of the 20 books to 50K, and I think that they've had a ton of success, and now they're touring all over the place to conventions, and that's amazing, and I'm glad that that works for them. I am not a right to market kind of guy. You know, just this last year, my publisher said, hey, you know, we want more big action thrillers. You know, that's what we want you to try to do. And so I got through about 30,000 words in a manuscript, and I've set it down. And it's not that I won't pick it back up, but I just don't feel like it had any heart in it, because it didn't. It really didn't. It was just me trying to write what I was told to write. And I'm like, you know, this could really be a good book if I had my heart into it, if I had that passion behind it. But because I don't, I'm going to step back, and I've started another project. And when I feel the time is right, and when I feel like I can do a good job with it, then maybe I'll go back with it. But yeah, I've got to write from the heart too.
Makes me curious. makes me curious. You said action thriller. That perked me up because this year's AFM, American Film Market, they were looking for a lot of action thrillers. So I'm wondering if your publisher has a connection to somebody who's trying to make movies.
That, you know, and that's very possible. Kind of what the editor prides himself on is trying to stay on top of current trends. So I've no doubt, and I don't know the inner workings or machinations of the company, but you know, it's probably likely. But you know what I love to write is horror, and not horror, not like Clive Barker or Tim Chismar horror, not slasher stuff, really gory stuff. But I like to write stories that just have some really dark shit in them.
And the psychological stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's still going to be some
gore
too, yeah. But you know, yes, but cool. Yeah, you know, and I think that when people think of horror, they almost think it's lower quality. At least that's the reaction I get when I say horror to people. And I don't feel like that's how it should be taken at all.
I think it's an irony, because if you look at someone like Stephen King, he's among the biggest selling novelists out there even to this day. And he started as a horror writer. I don't know if I wouldn't call what he writes today horror anymore. He definitely started as a horror writer. And look, I'm looking at a couple other guys I know, like Craig DeLuey and a few other, like that's where they cut their teeth, was in that genre and market. I think the word, for whatever the reason right now, the word is a dirty word in publishing. Cause even I will go to bookstores sometimes. I remember I was in Yuma, and I was looking for a horror section at the Barnes & Noble, and it was not there. They had incorporated their horror books into their literature books, a literature section. Wow. Which I thought was really, which is a really interesting.
I would have thought they would have gone thing. Psychological thriller.
Right.
Well, you know, the horror is interesting.
Or even general fiction. I mean,
that's where it was. It was general fiction. But it was interesting to me because, again, trends, horror isn't something that people don't necessarily think you can cater to kids. The counterbalance to that is the grim fairy tales, right? And I think that's
what about Goosebumps?
I like mine.
yeah, I know. But I mean, the idea of horror is blood, guts, gore, terror, like psychological thriller kind of stuff. The psychology of horror, I think, works in any genre, to be perfectly honest with you. But I don't think, but as a genre right now, it's not seeing any real, it has evolved to the point now it's just in a general fiction thing. That's where the trends are.
You have somebody on this panel who writes something very, very dark, who writes in a different genre. And I would venture to put her writing up against anybody's in terms of darkness.
Well, tell us a little bit about your darkness, Christy.
Well, I mean, what I want to say about the horror genre in general, thank you, Joe, that was very nice. So what I want to say about the horror genre is I think that horror movies these days outweigh the books by a lot. I think people like visually seeing the horror and just watching it go by instead of reading it for some reason. And I'm not sure if it has to do with the enormous amount of graphics or what it is. But I just find that I hear more people say that they want to see a horror movie than that they want to read a horror book. So there must be something in that. But anyway, yeah, it depends on what you're looking for with horror. There are so many different variations, and sometimes it's hard to tell. Is this just a lot of gore? Is this psychological? Is it just sort of campy, or does it have like a really good plot? Does it have to do with monsters or not? And I don't know. I don't think Amazon really does a great job categorizing that. And it's hard to find that stuff. At least that's what I've found.
Well, tell us about your novels, because you consider it dark fiction, or do you say horror?
It is dark fiction. Definitely dark fiction. I've written one horror short story, but Joe is referring to the dark psychological fiction that I write, which is the Dark Victoriana collection. And that is heavy on the psychology. There are a lot of visuals I have been told that it people could see it as either a movie or a play, anything along those lines. But I write it in a way that's more cinematic in the way that you can picture it. Now, that doesn't mean that I go into like a crazy amount of description or something, but I think that every single word counts, and especially, and that's the case in any genre, but when you're trying to really get into the psychology, when you're trying to get into relationships and you're trying to make something dark, the worst thing you can do is have a word choice that's on the lighter side or break that darkness in any way. You're really just not going to get your point across. So it is like, it's a difficult thing. I think it's more difficult to write than you think, like most people think. Yeah. What were you going to say, Jason?
Well, and I would say it cheapens it as well. I think you did a little live talk about this at one point, because I remember texting you about this. But yeah, you know, when you're talking about young adult or kids books, obviously we don't want, you know, graphic violence or sex or drug use in there, because it's not appropriate depending on their age. But when I'm reading a novel made for adults and I know that someone has tiptoed around the violence that happened or around, you know, some sexual assault or drug use, I'm almost a little offended, because I'm nearly 40 years old. I can handle this, and I want it. I want to know this part of the story. Don't take that away from me. You know, don't cheapen it, because you're not only making the read not as good, but I feel like it's reflecting on you as an author. You're telling me that, okay, you're not brave enough to really get out there and put that dark foot forward. I don't know. That's just me. But Jane, you also write some dark stuff, don't you?
Yes, very, very dark stuff.
Well, tell us a little bit about you.
I don't shy away from the hard scenes, and it's funny that, you know, we're having this conversation, because when Katie and I were talking, when she was struggling with her book, I was at an intersection with mine, and I'm like, I know what it's calling for. I don't know if I can do it. That's what I told her. And then I did it anyway. and she read it and she was like, oh no, she didn't.
It's painful sometimes writing that stuff.
Oh yeah. And it's like, okay, you know, when you're going through a story, you have the story in mind. Sometimes you have it plotted out. I'm not a plotter. So as I'm writing, it's sort of coming to me, you know, the next scene, et cetera. And it just goes where it wants to go. So sometimes it goes somewhere that's really dark, you know, and I guess I'm a little bit like George R. R. Martin, not afraid to kill major characters, because if the plot calls for it, you when you shy away from it, as you say, it's sort of like not true to the story.
Yeah. I agree completely. And I write really dark stuff too. That's what I write, and that's what I love to write. You know, and mine aren't slasher horror at all. They're more kind of paranormal stories that some really dark and disturbing things happen in it. And there is violence, there is sex, you know, there is plenty of F-bombs throughout. But I don't make a point to overdo the violence, but I always make sure that I write it the way that I'm actually seeing it. Mm-hmm. So that my readers can experience that as well. So I don't necessarily need entrails sliding down a wall, but you know, if he's going to stab her in the heart, then I want to hear how that knife went into her chest and killed her. I mean,
right.
But here's a good example. So I'm going to back away from the mic real quick, but I'm going to grab something to show you. So this was a gift that my wife got me from an artist here, and it's this cool bouquet thing of black, I don't know, something or other.
Having deja vu.
Yes, yes, yes. I've talked about this before. And then buried in the dirt here are little doll heads, and they're super creepy.
Yeah, but, that is creepy.
Yeah, but there's no, there aren't blood and guts running down the side of it or anything. So I don't have a problem keeping it out on display where my kids can come down and see it, because I feel like it's tastefully done. It kind of tells its own little story to me, and
it's and
I like it.
I think some of the most disturbing things have nothing to do with violence, like at all. You know, it can just be, how could one person do this to another person or treat family this way or something like that and really destroy their entire future? Anything along those lines can be disturbing, you know? But another thing is, and I'm not saying whether this is right or wrong, I'm just going to bring it up. I think horror also can have problems where, you know, and I think maybe other genres too, but where people now want trigger warnings for some things and it becomes sort of tricky. What do you put a trigger warning for? Because I have disturbing psychological stuff. Do I have to put, here's a trigger warning? Do you put it, like, what situations do you put it for? And I don't know. I find that people can be annoyed if you don't, and people can be annoyed if you do. But I think it does affect a number of genres in an interesting way.
Well, I think you're totally right. And I've never put a trigger warning on one of mine. However, I'm writing a series of erotic romance fairy tales, and I've been kind of polling some of my other author friends and saying, hey, you know what, what's the best way to do this? You know, how do I go about the marketing and the branding of it? And one of them had mentioned trigger warnings, and she said that if there's going to be dubious consent or non-consensual sex, that's something you definitely want to put a trigger warning on. Because some people can be very, very offended by that. In my first book, the Cold Room, there is a non-consensual sex scene in it, and it's bad, and it's portrayed as bad. You know, you know it's a horrible thing while you're reading it. And one reviewer wrote just a beautiful review of the book. I was so happy about it with it, and I posted it and shared it around. But she mentioned right in the review at the end, she said, you know, just to let you know, there is this scene in here, so watch out for that. And I thought that was interesting because that was my first experience with, oh, you know, maybe I should warn people about that. But I don't know. It's not a problem for me as a reader because I don't want to know about anything that might happen in the book.
It's interesting because I have a noir story I've put down for now, but it opens scene. Like, that's where it starts and it just gets darker from there. Actually, if I should do it, it's noir. It's very nihilistic kind of noir. So, I mean, anyone that's buying this kind of stuff, I think I know what they're getting into, but it just starts dark and it gets dark. Where I'm kind of struggling with right now is I have Cloud Diver Book 2 in my head. And one of the things I'm actually considering doing is actually doing a sensitivity reader kind of thing for it, because I'm talking about some really, so that series is about basically, it's The Matrix meets Indiana Jones. But one of the things I deal with, because I can see this as a thing now starting, is human experimentation on the genome and what is a human being. But that deals with a lot of stuff that's going on in today's world now. So I've been kind of approaching that. It's like, okay, how do I go about this in a way, right? Without that can get uncomfortable in spots, but doesn't actually, you know, not necessarily offend, but I don't want to just what's the term? Discriminate or make someone feel like, I'm lost for words. I don't basically want to ostracize anybody. Writing about that. And so I'm for the first time in a long time, this is the first time I've ever looked at a story. And I'm going, you know, what I may have to do with this to actually get this done exactly as right as I possibly can is interviewing some people for this that kind of fulfill that. And also maybe do a sensitivity read specifically tailored to that particular group of people. Well, I don't actually cross that line. I'm going to make mistakes, and some of that is just the way I think the story needs to be. But I would rather, again, I don't want to ostracize anybody doing it either. And I think we're coming to an age now because there are so many gray areas now in fiction in general, and where we're going as a culture today, that I think you have to kind of look. You kind of have to look at, okay, people are kind of going in their own niches and stuff. So how do I represent that in a way that's intelligent, that doesn't actually, you know, that can show good and bad things to it, but without a way that makes that necessarily demonizes or ostracizes people? Because I think that's a And that gets trickier, I think, with horror in particular, because you're dealing with psychological throes. So people have a lot more mental health issues today. Like, a lot more things are a lot more public today than they were 20, 30 years ago. So it's a really, I think, nuance, I think, in horror is a really big, big thing if you're going to go there, because you can say a lot without actually saying stuff too. So.
Well, and that's a really interesting line of thinking, Josh. And yeah. You might really be onto something there. In reference to sexual assault, there are, I think, probably a lot of women that would be willing to talk about their experiences if you just approach them as an author and say, "Hi, I'm writing this book, and this is kind of what's going on in it." You know, is this something that would immediately have you putting down the book, or, you know, would you rather have it accurately represented, or would you rather have it out altogether and kind of get some ideas based on their thoughts, because they've gone through things that I could never imagine. I don't know what kind of emotions they're going through.
I in that particular thing, I've already made a decision on that. I would nuance it. I wouldn't actually say it in the page. I would imply it, but I wouldn't say it. That's a personal choice. I think because I know that I have had friends who've been assaulted. I've nearly been assaulted, so I kind of have a bit of an idea what that feels like. So a little bit, not to the degree probably some other people here have, but I mean, I have a bit of an idea what that actually kind of feels like in my head. I don't know if I'd want to put that, like to put some of those feelings out there in a way that again, I don't want to ostracize anybody, and that's the real trick there. So
yeah. Well, now, Joe, can you tell us a little bit about your book that you have out already?
Sure. It's a crime thriller. It's psychological as well. It follows two dual storylines. So it's one story told in dual perspective. So one story is told by the cop, one story is told by the detective, and the other story is told by the murderer. And it's basically them telling the same story just in their view. And so it gets dark, and there are some uncomfortable things in it. I'm sure Christy could probably add a little bit of the uncomfortable things that I put in there. But and my father-in-law, I always tell the story that my father-in-law read the book, and when he read the book, he looked at me and he didn't speak to me for a couple hours. And then he looked at me and goes, I don't think I really know you anymore.
Well done, sir. Well done.
I said, it's just a book. It's just a book. There's nothing about it that's me in it. So, but yeah, it was, so that's what it's about. And it follows their pursuit of one another.
So. It's a really great book. And I love the psychology. I love the difference. I love when you see like what unravels behind each character's reason for the way they've become. And it, you know, villain, detective, you see a lot of interesting crossovers that I won't talk about. But anyway, it's worth a read. Very, very much so. It's really
good. It always gets me excited when somebody tells me that they relate to Jack a lot more than they thought they would, because Jack is the mass murderer, Jack Casey. And there is some duality to my whole thing was exploring the duality of a person. You know, we all have, there's two sides to every story, and we all have our version, and sometimes our version doesn't match that person's version, or sometimes you don't get to see why that person made the made the choice that they made. And so I wanted to explore that. And it actually was never, when I first wrote it, it wasn't a detective and a mass murderer, but it just fit. So, and then I actually went on a ride along and I did research. I actually met a retired Los Angeles police detective, and it all came together after that. So,
man, you're like legit, dude. That's awesome. Of course, when you say doing a ride along, I'm picturing somebody from Brooklyn Nine-Nine carting you around, which would be hilarious.
That would have been fun. Mine was completely boring, actually. not a darn thing happened on the, well, I could say damn on this on YouTube. Not a damn thing happened on my ride along. I literally sat in a car. I learned more sitting in the holding area and the bullpen. Just I was there for like 2.5 hours waiting for the ride along to start. And I was watching and observing, and I learned more in that 2.5 hours than I did in the hour and a half that I had the ride along. And then, of course, meeting the detective, that changed everything for me, because that made everything authentic. So,
yeah, what a cool experience, man. Now, Joe, you produce a variety of shows. Can you tell us a little bit about the shows that you make?
Sure. So. I started with my flagship show, which is Time to Go Indie Now, which is basically kind of like I kind of modeled it after like Real Sports or 60 Minutes. It's kind of reviews, and I had interviews in there when I started, but I've taken those out now, and it's just basically reviews and advice, and then I feature a filmmaker in each episode. And we sample their work. And then we have a very popular segment called New Releases, which is where authors read from their new releases. Jason's done it. Christy's done it. They read a section from their new release. And, you know, I put a little bit of panache to it, put some videos behind it, you know, some cutaways and some music and such. And that's a real popular segment, and that's part of that show. So that happens. That's the end of every month. I publish that show. And then I have two shows. One I just started, which was the first episode dropped last month, which was called Origins, which is examining the artist and who they are and where they became the artist and how what their art did to create the artist as well, and to change the artist and to mold the artist. So we examine them and then their art. And I did the first show with A.L. Mengel, who is very, very fascinating. And it was a very cool show. He was great to talk to. And so that's a show I do. That happens on the second Saturday of every month. And then the show that I'm posting tonight, which happens on the first Saturday of every month, is called Fandom Forum. And it's basically gathering a bunch of artists together or people together. Doesn't even have to be artists, just fans of a certain piece of work, a certain art. We've done movies. We've done books. I'm looking to do music, but music's a little bit more – that's a little harder to do just simply because everybody has certain tastes. And a lot of people will say that they like all kinds of music. So it's a little harder to pinpoint on that one. But – for art and for books and movies, it's a little easier to get people to gather. And we gather and we talk about that piece of art. And that's basically that show. And then I do a weekly show on Facebook called This Week in Indies, which is what I equate to as like Meet the Press for indie artists. We get together. The four of you have been on my show, and we do a roundtable discussion about issues that have happened during that week, and then CL Cannon adds a great segment called Indie Connection, which takes a comparable piece of art and gives you indie books that go along with that art. For example, like she did a Star Wars episode where she had books that would, if you really like Star Wars, you would like these books. So that's basically her segment, and that's part of the show as well. So those are the shows that I do currently. Like I said, I do post interviews periodically. I've started to just post the interviews just separately so that the artists can share that and put that out there. So, but that's what I'm doing currently. So,
well, and you do a very good job at it. And you,
thank you.
You're a guy that does a lot of research, and you talk to a lot of people. For anyone out there watching or who may be watching in the future who is in the writing business, because I know you do filmmaking stuff as well, what are some podcasts or shows that you watch or listen to that you find helpful in your writing career?
Well, the three that are here, for sure.
Well, aside from the three best ones.
Well, there's a great one called The Beautiful Book Geeks for readers. So if there's some reading fans that you guys have on your show, Beautiful Book Geeks is Heidi Angel, Rebecca Jonesy, and Amanda Hester. And they get together and they discuss books. They do that once a month. They do it at a weird time. It's like a Tuesday morning, which, you know, but it's always up there, so you can always get it later. That's a great show. I really like being a part of, you know, listening to that show. Honestly, there's not a lot of like book related shows that I really listen to anymore, other than the ones that are here.
One I've been listening to is The Creative Pen with two N's.
With Joanna Penn.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good show. I just think she tends to talk about the same thing a lot often. So yeah. I kind of go in and out of there. I mean, Michael Laurent has a great show, but it's more about building from the beginning stages, which, you know, none of us are beginners. So for beginners, for people getting into it, Michael Laurent has a great, it's called Author Level Up. And it's a show about the steps in which you take to get to the next step.
Okay.
Which is a great show.
Well, and I've been listening to a lot of podcasts while I'm at work, because I work at the vet clinic. And I started listening to the Creative Pen about a month or so ago. And what I love is, at least on iTunes, on my phone, I can look at the available episodes, see what they're about, and listen to it if I'm really interested. And yesterday, I listened to one that made me cry. It was, I have the name right here. It was Writing with Depression with Michael Brent Collings. And it was an incredible show. I mean, it was just to someone that doesn't struggle with mental illness, it might seem like a little bit of a downer, but it was not only very interesting and informative, but it was almost inspirational as well, because this is a man that makes a very good living as an author, as an international bestseller, and struggles with major depression and how it's affected his life and how he's learned to cope with it and still be able to work and still be able to be a prolific author, and how his family has to cope with it and help him through the struggle without going under themselves. And I was so moved by it, because listening to this man speak, I'm like, wow, it's like he's my clone. I mean, I feel so much like this man. And my struggles so closely mirror his own and I thought that was a really special thing. And it's not that every episode of her podcast touches me, but it was good. And I thought it was an amazing thing for her to be able to showcase on her show, on a show that a lot of times is talking about marketing and Patreon and this and that, to really get into some hard hitting stuff. I was impressed and a little envious too, because I was like, you know what? I would like for us to be able to help someone like that, or to touch people's lives like that. You know, that it's kind of a dream, not just through the show, but when I write something, you know, I would love it if someone, you know, sent me an email and said, hey, you know, your book really changed something in my life. That'll happen. What I want someday.
I think the thing about it is, like, you can only do the show that you really want to do, right? And so if you press it, or you try to make it something that you want it to go a certain way or this way, it never turns out that way, especially live. For doing a live show, it never goes that way. So, yeah, you know, you just have to – people get things out of things that you don't expect them to get at things out of, right? So for me, the show that turned me on to Josh's podcast was – Adam Dreese's second interview. That was an amazing, amazing interview. And Josh and him just had like this earnest, beautiful conversation. And I thought that was, I said, okay, this is the kind of show that I like. I like these shows, because I was a big Nerdist guy. And I think Hardwick did a good job of just sitting down with the guy and making him have a conversation. And that's why I really love your show, is because it's just a conversation. And those are the kind of shows that I gravitated towards. So When I heard that episode of Josh's thing, I instantly subscribed and I said, okay, this is the show. This is a show I wanna have, you know. And I think The Writer's Edge did that for me as well. But I totally see where you're coming from. But you know, you just have to do what comes natural to you and not worry about all that, and then all that will happen.
Yeah, so I've done over 200 episodes. I've had some very intimate personal conversations that have gone off the air. I can do for a good half hour once I was finished that conversation, because we just kept going. More recently, a conversation with Jane Bernard, that was very real. That we talked about her struggles and her like just getting out of bed and how much energy that took. I have a conversation coming up with, I have a lot of them. Jeanette Dover. We get into her issues and her struggles, and just, I'm very fortunate. I don't take this lightly. I've come to the point with my show that people trust me. Very, very, humbling thing, because I recognize the fact that I don't just talk about writing on my show. I talk about real stuff with people that's real to them, what matters to them. And I'm a platform for people to do that. And I don't take that lightly. I goof off. I mean, look, I have a eulogy to Fred the Fly coming up for the Christmas episode. And I had a blast interviewing. It's a band called Junkies Rush. I had a blast interviewing them. And it was
your board game one too. Your board game one is very, very jovial.
Exactly. And you know what? It goes both ways. It goes both ways. My board game one is just people goofing off, having a good time, and that you got that freedom too. I have had conversations about glitter on my podcast because I could have conversations about glitter on my podcast, right? It's where the conversation with Spider Robinson, that's going to air on January. We talk about his White House visit. It's hilarious. It is one of the funniest things. But in that same conversation, we talk about him and his wife who's passed on. We talk about some genuinely real stuff. And I am, again, I'm very, very, very humbled. And to go back to your point, I don't take this lightly. Someone I've known for a long time actually called me her hero yesterday. That was like, well, I'm blushing like a little schoolgirl now for the foreseeable future. Because that, again, it's better when you don't set out to do that, because that's when it actually happens.
Yeah, the first time I was on this show was with Amanda Hester and me, and the topic went into depression. You guys had a very earnest conversation, Jason.
Yeah. I like Amanda a lot, and I think that conversation was not only good for me, but good for her. And you know, we've kept in touch since then, because it, you know, the whole idea behind that conversation ended up being that you need a support network, and you need to be able to reach out to your friends and have them trust you enough to reach out, vice versa. And that's an important thing for anyone to know that's living with depression or any kind of mental illness, is that you are not going to burden your friends by reaching out to them. You're not. Just do it. I mean, it's okay. Over this summer, it was a very bad summer, and I ended up reaching out to a lady that I only knew very, very superficially on Facebook. But because I had seen her post a couple of times about depression and things that she had went through, and I just sent her a message and basically told her, hey, I'm pretty fucked up. You know, it's going as wrong as it can go right now. And long story short, you know, she helped me get through it. You know, her and another friend and my wife, you know, really pulled me through it. But don't underestimate the power of friendships, and don't ever be afraid to reach out to people. If you are struggling, just reach out. Well, man, that kind of took a weird turn there. Jeez, man.
No. Actually, I'm going to add to the small thing. This is like, we're talking about like the kind of shows people want to see. And this is the theme of this. Okay, so I always think that the best the best shows are the organic, genuine shows. That's why I don't mind when you derail things, because it's you. It's legitimately you. And I think, and it wouldn't be any other way, and it wouldn't work as well as it is. I think you and Katie are a good balance, because I think sometimes she's the one that kind of goes, okay, Jason, the chain's here. But that's okay. The fact of the matter is, right? No one wants to hear an inauthentic show. No one. I don't have the time. No one has that time. To go out there and you're going to do a show of any kind, whatever it is, it has to be something that really, really touches with you. And people can feel it when that's the case. People know it. I know, like, people, when they listen to my show, they know that you're going to be either entertained, we're going to talk about something deep, or I'm going to try to inspire you. Because those are the three things I do on my show. I try to do each and every time. I want to get a sense of who that author is, and I want them to tell their story. And that's my show in a nutshell, right? And that's my goal each and every time I do a show. Sometimes I think our shows are better than not. But again, that's the goal every time I go out there. And because of that, people gravitate to it. Your show, whatever any of your shows are about, as long as they feel real and they're organic and it's you. Because, well, ultimately people don't, like, I say this on my show, people don't buy books. They buy you. Your books are an emphasis of you. They are an expression of who you are as a person in some way or another. So that is what you are selling. So if it's really you, like going back to writing to market, you can write to market if it fits your niche and your what you're doing, then you should. But if you die, if it's not who you are, don't do it. It's a waste of your time.
So be true to yourself, right?
Yes.
Well,
absolutely.
I have to say, we're about to go into one of my new segments called Teach Me Something, where you guys teach me something. And Josh's topic was to teach me something about podcasting. And I didn't even get to ask the question, because he did. He just taught us all something about podcasting, you know, and what he just said. And I think that's an important thing for all of us to remember, even those of us that have been doing this for a few years. Or if you're brand new, remember, you know, stay true to yourself, talk about the things that you want to talk about, and that's how you do it. And if people love you, they're going to be there. And if people don't love you, they're going to move on to something else. And that's not the kind of people you want anyway, because they're not into what you're doing. So well done, Josh. All right. So on to Teach Me Something. Joe, I told you you'd be first. I want you to teach me something about the art of interviewing.
All right. Well, I jokingly, but not so jokingly, said that this question really belonged to Christy, because she teaches me something about interviewing every day, and I steal a lot from her. But which is true. But I will indulge the segment so that I don't bring it down and actually give you two things that I think are really important in an interview, and that is, one, to do your research, to look at the person's other interviews, to see what they've been asked a lot of times, you know, because you don't want to ask the same question they've heard 100 times, because they've heard it 100 times, they're going to give you a canned answer, or they're going to be upset that you gave them the same answer or you gave them the same question. So you want to definitely do your research and dig deep into that person, you know, find everything you can about that person. You might find something that will angle toward what you're trying to accomplish in the interview. And then the second thing I would say is aim to have a conversation. Don't aim to have a question and an answer. Don't just be like, okay, here's my question, give my answer. Okay, here's my next question. Be more authentic, you know, be friendly and have a casual, more conversational approach. And if you do that, I think both ways you'll be successful.
Well, and I really appreciate that advice. And that's advice that you've given me when I reached out to you saying, hey, you know, I'm going to start going to conventions and talking to people. You know, what the hell am I going to talk to them about? You know, what questions do I ask? And that's what you told me. You said, you know, have a conversation. You know, you can have some topics, you can have some notes, and definitely do your research, but try to make it about having a conversation. And
the guy you did in the hotel, I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, but that was a really, really great interview because
Roche.
The two of you sat down and it was like you'd been talking for an hour and a half before that. I don't know if that was the case, but it felt like that. It felt organic, and when you went it right into it, it just worked. And I think that made me interested right off the bat.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate that. I really do. And Josh, I haven't forgotten what you said about wanting to chat with her. And she's been going around the country doing different shows. So, but I am gonna, I'll shoot her an email. Yeah. And see if I can connect you two, because you would absolutely love her. I mean, once you start digging into her background, holy crap. I mean, the woman's just, she's done everything. Lots and lots of material. So, all right. Well, we're moving on to Miss Christie. And Miss Christie, I would like you to teach me something about writing dark fiction.
Well, you write dark fiction, so it's a little hard, but
so you're gonna have to step it up here.
All right. Okay. Well, here I go. I think that one of the most, I mentioned word choice before, and that's more of a superficial thing. That's more of it. I would say it's an easier thing, even though it's not easy. But I think that one of the best things you can do with dark fiction is to really work at pitting the reader against themselves. So they see moral ambiguity, they see gray areas, and they see characters that they love to hate. They just can't help but love them, but they're doing horrible things, you know? And for a reader to say, like, I really shouldn't like this person, but I actually do, and like, are they doing the wrong thing really, even though it's technically horrible? I can't help myself, you know, that kind of a thing. I think that's one of the best things you can do in dark fiction. It really makes them think, and it really makes them think far outside themselves and what they're used to and in a lot of fiction. And I think that's something that's becoming more and more popular when it's done right. I'm seeing it from, for example, like The Wife Between Us, those authors, and it's something that that I work to do. And so like in my last book, Brotherhood of Secrets, I had a character who's, and it's not a shock, he is committing murder, but you can't really blame him, actually, when you read his reasons. And not just his reasons, the way he's being manipulated to do it. It's not totally his fault. So, and you tend to like him, like he's usually people's favorite characters. So like when you make that, when you sort of, the best way to phrase it is pit the reader against themselves. Like, I like them, but I don't want to, but I shouldn't, but I should, you know, like it's really tough, but I think it's a really positive thing to do.
Wow. Christy just explained the entire Republican Party to me. All of a sudden it just clicked.
There's no question about whether I love them or hate them, but anyhow, we won't get into that. No, and Christy, that was a phenomenal answer. And I'm going to bring her up again because, as everyone knows who has ever heard me speak about anything, Victoria Schwab is my current favorite author. She's my author crush. She is just fantastic, and her books do a lot of that. If you read Vicious or Vengeful, you fall in love with these characters, even though they are just doing the most despicable frickin' things ever. Yes, but I think that's great advice. And Oh, go ahead, Josh.
Darker Shade of Magic, similar too. That's her as well.
Yeah. And that one's awesome. But yeah, you know, making, and I think especially making bad guys that you're forcing readers to subconsciously love, I think that's a special talent. And I think that it earns us a special place in hell as well.
They want more of these terrible people, and they feel bad, but they love it, you know?
Well. All right. So Jane, whose last name is not Johnson, you've been writing a long time, and you've got a lot of books, and yes, you are a wife and a mother and even a grandmother, right?
Yes.
So I want you to teach me, because I really could use this knowledge, a little bit about how you structure your life as an author to work as a member of a family too? I mean, how do you make this all work without everybody saying, get out of the basement, stop writing and interact with us?
I write in the chair in the family room in the middle of everything. And I always have. I guess I never excluded myself from the family, although my brain was never there when I was writing. So while I was physically in the room with the kids and, you know, the TV was on and all of that, I just, boom, I'm in the story. Forget it.
you can just tune it out, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's the same thing when I read or when I'm really watching a television show. I can tune everything around me out. I know it's a unique talent that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah, they can't do it.
So I never really had my little own space. You know, I should ask my husband to come over here and say something, but you know, he did a lot of this stuff around the house. He made it so, you know, I could do stuff in the evenings, and, you know, I love him for that.
I have
a full-time job too. So full-time job, mother, grandmother. Yeah.
What do you do for your day job?
I'm a business analyst at a insurance company and the broker dealer. So,
okay.
So, you know, I work when we have major projects, I work probably about 50 hours a week. He works 80. So, and then I come home and I do my writing in the evening.
How do you have the brain power to write after all that work?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It depends on stuff. My writing is my escape. You know, it's my fantasy land, even though it's dark. And after some time, you know, some really bad days at work, it's really good to kill people in the page. So, you know, it is a relief.
I can totally get behind that.
You know, I'm not really good with balance. I'm learning, you know. My kids are now out of the house. My son's at college. My daughter's married and has a, you know, we have the grandchild. So, you know, now I have more time to just sit and enjoy myself.
Well, good.
So, Michael joined me to say around how people used to ask him how he used to shut out the heckling and the crowds and stuff like. He said that he treated that moment like a sponge, in that if he just absorbed it all, it would just numb him and he wouldn't hear it anymore. Or the very opposite, which is if he got, like, you know how a sponge sometimes gets too much water and you have to squeeze out the water, he would just squeeze out the water and squeeze out the crowd. And that was how he dealt with, you know, millions of people yelling at him, or 100,000 people yelling at him.
Who was that?
Michael Jordan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be.
He used to say that a lot. And I've also heard from some of the more the basketball players who lived in the ghetto areas or the, you know, rural areas. What they, you know, they would always say, you know, crowds don't bother them because trying to play basketball when a 400-ton train is going over top of your head while you're trying to shoot a hoop. You know, good luck with that.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, noises. Once you get used to it, I think you just become. It just becomes part of your.
There just comes a point where you can tune out distraction, right? I mean, because you just recognize it for what it is. It's just there. You can't control it, so why worry about it? It's there. You're there. Let's do it.
Right? I don't know if you've had these moments, Josh, but I'm starting to get to the point where. Like when I'm interviewing somebody, and I interview people a lot in crowded rooms or rooms where people are always talking, and you know, because I do it in the lobbies of these film festivals or whatever, and I just never hear any of them. I'm just focused on the interview.
The only time I get annoyed is when I'm interviewing somebody. I'm always afraid that when I'm hearing this obnoxious, it's usually the mom or dad, not the kids, the mom or dad. They're being really obnoxious, right across. I always worry that is that going to translate into the conversation. That's as much as it registers to me. But then after a while, I was just like, okay, you know what? This is important. I'm chatting with so-and-so who's awesome. Let's just get back to that, right? And that's it. It's the only time I get taken out. It's like, wow, you're loud. Okay, back to work.
And I can't do it. I can't hardly do it at all. Like, I'm one of those people that if I've got a phone up to my ear and you're standing in front of me trying to speak, it's all completely unintelligible. I can't understand any of it.
That's because you're trying to do both at once. What you have to do is you have to choose, right? You choose one and that's the one you focus on. The other one doesn't matter.
Well, and that's what I do at conventions. I just kind of tunnel vision out. But actually, speaking of which, when I was in Grand Rapids covering the Comic-Con a couple weekends ago, and I went to school went to college in Grand Rapids, and I'm in the middle of this interview with Mindy Arnett, and all of a sudden this gigantic guy comes up and hugs me, and I'm like, and it was a guy I knew from school, and I just kind of broke my chair here a second there too. Whoa! Now we're going way back. But yeah, we're running. Oh, look at that. Now I'm short. Jeez. Go.
You became me for a minute.
I can't do anything now. But yeah, we are kind of running long on time here, but I did want to make a little kind of special announcement of my own. I am building a sound booth down here in the basement. I'm taking over the kids' art room since they just trash it all the time anyway. So I'm building a recording booth down here because I'm going to start doing a little bit of voiceover work. And I've got a nice professional condenser mic coming in just a couple days here, hopefully, fingers crossed. And I'm going to be starting up a little offshoot podcast of my own, and it's just going to be called Storytime. And what I'm going to be doing, and Josh, you and I have talked a little bit about this, and I think down the road I might try to do some kind of serial novel on it. But what I'd like to do is narrate a short story. The first one I'm going to do is my own, and then talk about creating the story, talk about just the art of creation itself. And I'd like to have other authors on that I can narrate a short piece of their fiction, and that'll play first. And then we'll kind of chat a little bit about storytelling ideas. And I'd love to have, Josh, you were the first person to know about this, but I'd love to have any of you guys on to do that. I think that'd be a lot of fun. So yeah, so that's my big news. But yeah, we are kind of long on time. Do you guys have anything else you want to add before we close up for tonight?
It's been great.
Maybe this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has been great. So cool. Okay. Well, everybody, this has been another episode of Spilling Ink Live. I think my chair is still a little too low here. I don't feel like I'm in the camera right. I broke my chair a couple seconds ago. So I just want to thank all of our wonderful guests for coming on tonight and hanging out. You guys are some of my favorite people, and I really love chatting with you all. So thank you.
I just have one thing to say, Jason.
Cog! What Joe is trying to say is that the new Star Trek movies are far better than the old one. That's the bottom line that he's trying to say. Oh, all right, everybody. Have a good night, and we'll see you at the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.